when W.B. Yeats, then in his early 20s, selected and edited his collections of Irish fairy tales and other stories drawn from the storytelling traditions of the Irish countryside, he was venturing into a well-established Irish literary area. If there is a particular fountainhead in folktale collecting in Ireland, non-Irish inspirations such as Walter Scott's three-volume Minstrelsy of the Scottish Border, 1803, are obviously a crucial influence too. A plausible starting point is Thomas Crofton Croker's Fairy Legends and Traditions of the South of Ireland, in 1825. In fact, Yeats's first plan had been to edit Crofton's book before he changed to his own more wide-ranging anthologies, containing 12 stories by Croker, almost twice as many from any other 19th-century Irish collector. Mary Helen Twenty, the great authority on this genre, characterises Croker's attitude to his materials and their providers as patronising. In the preface to part two of his collection, Croker deeply lamented that the popular superstitions of Ireland still existed among the peasantry, and that such delusions retard the progress of their civilization. When rational education shall be diffused among the misguided peasantry of Ireland, Croker says, the belief in such supernatural beings must disappear in that country, as it has done in England. It is striking how much more positive and receptive Yeats is than Croker. His attitude, as Twenty says, is more in line with the English literary commentators like Dickens in Household Words, where he says of fairy tales that they should be respected. To preserve them in their usefulness, they must be as much preserved in their simplicity and purity and innocent extravagance as if they were actual fact. 1853. Likewise, Thackeray, in his Irish sketchbook in 1843, had delighted in the availability of folklore in Ireland, and lamented that in England, the march of knowledge began to banish fancy out of the world, and gave us, in place of the old fairy tales, such books as Conversations on Chemistry, The Little Geologist, Peter Parley's Tales about the Binomial Theorem, and the like. Yeats begins the introduction to his fairy and folk tales of the Irish peasantry with exactly this regret, taking it back as far as the early 17th century to Dr. Corbett, Bishop of Oxford and Norwich, who lamented long ago the departure of the English fairies, which now, in the time of James, King James I, had all gone. In his Celtic Fairy Tales in 1892, Joseph Jacobs declared, "The folk tale in England is in the last stages of exhaustion." The Celtic folk tales have been collected while the practice of storytelling is still in full vigour, though there are every signs that its term of life is already numbered. Yeats similarly rejoiced that Irish folklore was still a living tradition. Whereas Croker deplored and rationalised Irish superstitions, Yeats strove to take them seriously and delighted in their extravagant imagination. And while Croker presented Irish folklore in terms of English literature and international studies in folklore, Yeats presented his materials as a peculiarly Irish tradition. We are not far from Kuno Meyer's proposition about the Celts that the half-said thing to them is dearest. In fact, despite his readiness to take seriously this popular material, Yeats, who we should always remember, was found guilty of undue scepticism by his more committedly occultist friends, does himself occasionally betray a healthy scepticism, without quite displaying Croker's more socio-political concern. In A Visionary, in Yeats's The Celtic Twilight, we read that this young visionary's pleasure was to wander about upon the hills, talking to half-mad and visionary peasants, or to persuade queer and conscience-stricken persons to deliver up the keeping of their troubles into his care. So how does Yeats rate as a collector of folklore? Kathleen Raines says in her introduction to The Celtic Twilight that the first version of the book certainly does not show him to be particularly gifted as a collector of folklore. She goes on to say that there is, in these gleanings and reflections of the young poet, a quality of simplicity, of innocence,